This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Ladies and gentlemen, Orange Bloods, welcome back to the Deep Dig podcast here on the Yak. My name is Alex Dunlap. I am the lead football analyst at orangebloods.com. I am the co-founder at Roster Watch and the Pro Football Writers of America's new media chairman, a job I'm trying to honestly dish off on any unsuspecting young victim that I possibly can. And to be honest, it's not really that hard a position. If it was, I would have already just had to step down. The fact is, I'm doing a bad job right now because I have so many other jobs, like at Orange Bloods and like at Roster Watch. And all the work I'm doing right now is coming to a bit of a culmination because, as most of you all know, I covered the NFL draft with great interest. With great interest. Always have. It's always like, I've only just now in this age where we can be so connected and we can hear from one another and form sort of communities with like-minded individuals online. Only in my, you know, in my adult life have I realized people love the NFL draft just like I do. And I don't know why. It's a sickness. I was interviewed by a guy on Orange Bloods who is a, I don't know. Am I allowed to say that he's on Orange Bloods? I don't mean to out the guy as a Texas fan, but he's Brian Curtis from The Ringer, who's like their editor at large up there. He does the great podcast on The Ringer Network, The Press Box, which is a podcast that critiques and just talks about issues pertaining to how media covers different sports and political events and goings on. But he also, you know, he also writes, I guess, occasionally, because he contacted me and asked me just like, and it was the same thing he asked all these guys that work in the draft industry, like, what, you know, what got you into this? And everybody has just different answers. And whenever he asked me, I didn't really know what to really say about why it was that I've just always loved the NFL draft. I think maybe that I grew up being just a fan of a losing NFL franchise, like the Houston Oilers. And you'd always hope for, hope for something through the draft process or whatever. Like, that's something you could look forward to after the season had been lost. It's why all these Cleveland Browns, like right now, it's probably always been like this, I guess. But Cleveland Browns fans are the most interested fans always about the draft. They're like the most knowledgeable. They know all about it, all the previous drafts. Like, when a Cleveland Browns fan gets at you on Twitter about about different value from draft to draft or positionally from draft to draft, like they'll tell you, like, well, look, in 2011 we had this guy at defensive end. He went in the first. Like, everybody projected so and so to go to first. He went in the second. Blah blah blah. And then there were, you know, three after that and everything else, you know. So your point doesn't make sense about the depth because the depth wasn't distributed correctly. And you say, you know what, that makes perfect sense. And you know why? Your team sucks and it's always right here at the top of the draft order, and you've thought about this maniacally every single year. And you remember all this shit and it pains you. And that's just the way the draft is. And I love it. It's my favorite thing about the NFL. And so let's just get into it. This is episode 46. This is the Deep Dig. Malik Jefferson, 15 snaps on defense in week 12 with the Cincinnati Bengals, all on special teams. 60% of the entire special team snaps for Malik Jefferson. This was after a week. Let me get it pulled up here. Because what made me look into this was that Malik Jefferson was mentioned in a column at Cincy Jungle, which is the SB Nation website for the Cincinnati Bengals. And I bet you if I just type in Malik Jefferson and I search news, yeah, here's the title from the 24th of November, which was after Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving sure did come early this year, didn't it? The Bengals need to unleash LB Malik Jefferson. That was on November 24th, 2018. over at Cincy Jungle, and an actual Bengals website that I like to visit. So you have here what had just happened. Preston Brown had been placed on injured reserve. Perfect. I mean, this deal says he's a leader and a force at the position. That's not necessarily true. I think Vontaze Burfict sucks, and I think he's a creep. And as admitted in this column, that he's been pacified this season and dealt with injury. Nick Vigil's been out with a sprained MCL. It's been disastrous at the linebacker position for the Cincinnati Bengals. Look at what tight ends are doing to them. Look at what receiving running backs are doing. Who do the Bengals have this week? Oakland. So, I mean, not really. You would think Jalen Richard, maybe. Jared Cook's the guy who, if Derek Carr really wants to try and win a game on the road, that's a big one. And I don't know why they would want to, because they need to lose as many games as possible to get Nick Bosa. But if they do want to try, if Oakland and Derek Carr do want to try and win, it's going to go through Jared Cook, who's facing the best possible matchup of all opposing tight ends in the National Football League. A tip for your DFS lineup. Bengals 3-point favorites at home against the Raiders. But look, that's not the point. The point is back to Malik Jefferson. The next week, week 13, 68% of total special team snaps versus Denver. No snaps on defense. And then finally, last week, at the Chargers, 2 snaps at linebacker. So maybe we'll get some Malik Jefferson soon. For the Bengals, we should. He was good at Texas, man. Whenever Malik Jefferson came to Texas, did everybody not think we'd be talking about him in the NFL one day? Well, now he's in the NFL, and always getting played at his special teams. There's sort of an opportunity here creeping up. He did play 2 snaps on defense last week. We should look and see what happens this week versus the Oakland Raiders. What a better chance, man, if you're that shitty football club up there in Cincinnati, who cares so much more about your bottom line and about your revenue than you do about actually trying to win on the football field. God damn. I mean, you stick with Marvin Lewis after this guy has shown year after year after year that he's capable of taking the talent that he has and bringing them to the playoffs. But then in the playoffs, the teams fold and just show every bit of their undisciplined nature. That ties directly back to the head football coach in the National Football League. It's just how it works in the NFL. The culture of that team is dictated by the head coach. And this dude brings in Hugh Jackson as a defensive assistant. You know what? Good for him that the Cincinnati has just disintegrated like this. With that said, all of the linebacker losses make a big opening for Malik Jefferson. Speaking of the linebacker position at the University of Texas, we have Anthony Wheeler moving on, graduating. Gary Johnson, moving on, graduating. I'm going to be writing in the war room at Orange Bloods about some notes that I picked up from one NFL scout. Let me pull them up. I have them here in my email. And let's just see. These are detailed. Yep. What do we see? So Wheeler's gone, as he is a senior, right? Of course he's. I don't want to talk about the exact grades they put on these guys because I want to leave it for the column, for the war room. But Gary Johnson's going to be a big loss at the Rover. At the Mike, Anthony Wheeler won't be quite as big a loss because he's a little bit stiff. We've talked about why. He isn't fast, you know. And here's the thing. At that position, you need to be more of a playmaker. You need to be more rangy. You need to be more of a baller, a football player, a dynamic weapon that could be a volume tackler with a nose for the football that can also just be a star on the defense. And everybody knows that that Mac position in Todd Orlando's defense, the Mac is not going to be, you're not going to get quite as flashy the plays and as flashy the looks as the Rover is. And I've been telling the people at Orange Bloods this ever since Orlando came from the University of Houston. It's that Rover that is allowed to spill over the top of all this junk and make these plays in space, because that's the guy who's considered the star. He makes the splash play. It's what Gary Johnson was. It was what Malik was Malik had to switch it up, actually, because it depended on whether he was in the lineup with Anthony Wheeler or whether he was in the lineup last year with Gary Johnson. But regardless, the Rover and Todd Orlando scheme is a real star on defense. He's freed up to make a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage. And just look what Gary Johnson was able to do this season behind the line of scrimmage. And so Texas loses those guys. Wheeler, who's at least been a starter. He's been a kind of a good volume tackle guy. Even though he's stiff, he doesn't really have the requisite speed on his pursuit angles. He's never going to get up the seam in coverage against a really good and fast and athletic tight end like the kid they had at OU this year. That's just not going to be how he rolls. And so being now that it's in the off season and this isn't the regular game breakdown deep dig that you're used to, some of the content I do is like starting, like I'm starting to try to catch back up on recruiting. Because underneath these guys, you think about it, DeMarco Boyd, who knows what's happening with him after his incident last summer, you know, after being involved in a car, a small like fender bender, but then apparently getting into an altercation with another driver or something like this. Who knows about him? Chris Boyd's gone. We'll talk about it in a little while. What we're going to talk about is Chris Boyd, his sort of draft stock, Charles Omenihu, and then the funny dichotomy beginning to take place between Colin Johnson and LaJordan Humphrey. But, you know, Chris Boyd gone now. You wonder, is DeMarco Boyd even really coming back? And then you start thinking about the linebackers for next season, and you think, well, all right, well, probably Jeffrey McCulloch moves inside from that B-backer spot, and Deliadei away is likely at the, probably at the MAC, and McCulloch at the Rover. McCulloch's the Shark. He's fast. I mean, he plays outside currently. And you look at this kid that they're recruiting now, or not recruiting, he's committed. He's going to come to Texas here on the 19th. And what I've been doing is I've been trying to catch up sort of on recruiting. And when I look at the guys who I've already looked at, I've already looked at guys like Jordan Whittington and the wide receiver Jake Smith. These are all guys who I've seen live. Or no, I haven't seen Jake Smith live. But the offensive tackle, Tyler Johnson, at least live or in a camp set. Jake Smith's a guy who I need to see live, but I almost don't need to see that kid live. He's that good. The Gatorade National Player of the Year, Jake Smith, the wide receiver out of Arizona that's coming to Texas. He is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Everyone will see soon. Javon Shepherd, the offensive tackle, I've seen him. And generally, I don't really watch too much, you know, of the highlights of these guys or anything like that until they're committed. And by the time they're committed, I'm usually busy with other work. But when it comes time for the signing period and the signing day, and there's a signing day coming up on the 19th, that's the early signing day, I have to get my wits about me about who's who in this class so I can, you know, tell people what at least my initial evaluations are on them. I always have it with the caveat that I don't finish my final evaluations on these guys till I see them live there at practice and, you know, confirm their size, confirm their speed, just see how it looks versus a practice field full of other college athletes. So this kid, DeGabriel Floyd, coming to Texas, he's a four-star player. He's being recruited out of Westlake, California. That's a suburb of L.A., 6'2", 245. And his tape really is, like, his tape is good. It's violent on the defensive side. He does this stuff where, like, he has a bunch of highlight plays where he picks people up and body slams them. I don't care so much for that. What I do care about is how, when he plays inside, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, off ball from the inside, how he keeps his feet square to the line of scrimmage and how he can plant and redirect extremely well while shedding blockers around the hips. God damn it. I need to listen back to this and write it down. Because this is what I need to write for a column. It's like, and whenever you think about that skill and you watch back any of these games, not necessarily in his highlights, but there's a game on you. There's at least one game on you. And you see that from the inside position. But when I watch him, sometimes with his feet, the change of direction can be explosive. The recognition is good. The guy's a playmaker, dude. I think he returns punts. He plays all kinds of different positions. He's definitely a baller of an athlete. Not super fast. At the opening, the Nike opening, he ran a 4.78, something like that. So not super fast, but even some of the times these guys who aren't super fast. We talked about DeMarco Boyd earlier, right? From Gilmer, brother of Chris Boyd, linebacker at Texas. Who knows the current status of him? But a guy who would play the MAC linebacker at Texas, at this point in time, just judging by what, you know, if he was back, his role would be somewhere on the depth chart at the MAC linebacker spot, the Mike. And I've seen that guy in summer 7-on-7 play wide receiver for Gilmer. and be the team's by far the team's MVP. And it's because these guys that go on to play in college and get scholarships to big schools like Texas, or like in the case of DeGabriel Floyd from California, like the schools from all over the country, and you're a 4-star, borderline 5-star kid. You're just different than the other kids, and so you got to look at how these guys, you know, how these guys look versus college competition. But the fact of the matter remains that DeGabriel Floyd probably, he looks faster in his film than 4.78. You know, he looks faster than a 4.8 guy. I think he's a guy who doesn't know how to run a 40-yard dash, and when he's at the opening and it's being tested by Nike and all this stuff, it's being tested like it's being tested by professionals. He doesn't seem to me like a guy that does much, you know, sprinting in track. And there's a lot of tricks these guys get taught whenever they are preparing for the NFL combine. And look, I think DeGabriel Floyd is good. Here's my initial thought, though. He's being recruited at the rover position, and I think that's what he wants to play. Is it the will? But just the way his body looks, the way he moves, and there's one... I'm gonna put it up in an article at Orange Bloods. There's one bags drill that he does at his high school where I see his feet and I say, oh, okay, now we're cooking. I see what we're talking about with these feet. But at the Rivals Camp videos, I don't see it with his feet. I don't necessarily see it with his feet in a lot of his highlights. But there is one video that I'll share in my column that I put at Orange Bloods where you can see it with his feet. So. And I think that shows too. I think it shows, at least in the highlights, at least functionally in some ways. Like I said, the change of direction and the ability what did I even say earlier? I should have just remembered this because I needed to write that down. It's to be able to like laterally shed contact at the second level as he gets closer to the first level. And being able to do that is a really big deal. So DeGabriel Floyd is the next guy that I've watched. I'll probably have about 3 or 4 of these guys next time on the pod, because I'm going to have to get brushed up on a whole ton of them before the 19th, because that's the early signing day. A couple other things I wanted to touch on here, I guess. Chris Boyd accepted his invitation to the Senior Bowl. So we're good there. I was super worried that he hadn't accepted it, if we're being completely honest, because I feel like new Senior Bowl director Jim Nagy was, you know, it's kind of like a you-know-what or get-off-the-pot kind of moment that they only had 5 before today. I wrote about it this week. I talked to an NFL agent about a few of these players, and the first thing that the agent asked me is, like, why hasn't Chris Boyd accepted his Senior Bowl invite? I said, I don't know. And there are a lot of things that go into it. These guys right now are hearing from agents. They're hearing from all kinds of outside sources about where their draft stock is, what it is that they can expect. You know, Chris Boyd is not in the position right now to turn down an opportunity like the Senior Bowl. That's what I wrote about on Tuesday. I was glad to see that today he accepted his invitation, and I'm going to be happy to see him there, dude. I'll be happy to bring you guys coverage of Charles Omenihu and Chris Boyd at this year's Senior Bowl. Also, some other cool invites today. Jalen Hurd from Baylor. Be able to talk to him about, I don't know, what he thinks about certain players on the Texas defense, or how they sort of scouted that unit. I'll certainly be able to talk to the Oklahoma offensive line guys who are there. It'll be an awesome week in Mobile. We'll have it all covered for you right here and also over at Orange Blood. From a fantasy football perspective and from a dynasty perspective and a general NFL perspective, we'll have it covered for you over at Roster Watch. So what this agent said about Boyd, dumb, you need to accept the invite. You're not one of these dudes who is, you know, locked into some sort of first round, you know, draft pick to where this day can't help you. This is a day that can help you. And, you know, at some point, Senior Bowl director Jim Nagy, he's going to have to move on and find some of these other dudes. And so it was good to see him commit to the game today. The NFL scout who I spoke with has a second or third round grade on Chris Boyd, which honestly I was a little unexpected. I know there'd been talk sort of about Chris Boyd going high in the draft, but day two, even after he had some pretty miserable games to end his time as Texas, so A little bit unexpected there. Let me just see. Let me just pull up the actual recap I have here. So not all of this will, of course, not also go on the column. And, this isn't all-encompassing of everything. But when we talk about, let's see here, isn't this riveting, riveting radio? Let's see here. Okay, what can we see? Charles Ominihu, this scout, this is an area scout. He's not a GM. He gives his information up to the larger organization. A second or third round grade on Charles Ominihu. Explosive off the snap. Uses strong back flexibility to maintain leverage and get underneath blockers despite his height and length. When attacking the C-gap, prefers to take a wide outside step to set up tackles to use a cross chop. He uses it to move and try and get inside. Looks like there's a little bit of an issue with a concern about lack of functional strength, but he can suffocate lateral space quickly when crashing and does a good job of holding the point of attack against more powerful run blocks. So what the fuck? I mean, if he does that well, then the other interesting thing, Colin Johnson has a second round grade from this guy. Well, Jordan Humphrey only has one in like the fifth or the sixth round. It's just so interesting. All we've heard about is the agent, from the agent side, we hear about all the heat being on LaJordan Humphrey. Maybe it's because they think that he's the one who might go pro. Well, they think that Colin Johnson's a guy who's probably going to stick around. But, man, LaJordan Humphrey's looked really good at times this season, and honestly, he's probably looked like the better and the more productive receiver than Colin Johnson. Just given what we've seen, and maybe that's not fair to say because Colin Johnson has been very, very productive. I mean, from a pure production standpoint, on the season, it could be that Colin Johnson has been even more productive. So let's see, 2018 cumulative stats from TexasSports.com, which you guys know I don't always completely rely on, certainly for stuff like, for receiving yards, everything like that, of course. It's the defense that I don't agree with how these things are tallied. The most important thing is because it's for the reasons of they double count stuff. Like if somebody sacks a player, they get counted for a tackle and a sack. That's just not how we do it. Okay, so LaJordan Humphrey receiving 79 for 1109, Colin Johnson 65 for 945. LaJordan Humphrey also 9 touchdowns, Colin Johnson 7 touchdowns. Okay. So as expected, Lil Jordan Humphrey has been more productive, and he's exhibited some traits that have been really beastly and really clutch and have real baller gene sorts of sensibilities. And so I just thought it was interesting, man, that it just goes to show one area scout is not, it really doesn't mean much. It's just one dude turning in his papers to the GM and to the coach, and this is what I saw. But what that guy saw is that the guy that Texas fans should be worried about leaving at the wide receiver position is probably Colin Johnson, more so than Lil Jordan Humphrey. My name is Alex Dunlap. This has been The Deep Dig. You can only find it right here on The Yak.